Tension is building in Egypt as the Supreme Constitutional Court suspends a presidential decree reinstating the dissolved parliament. President Mohamed Morsi ordered rather lawmakers to get to work, and the chamber held a brief session on Tuesday. The reinstatement of parliament is being seen as the first confrontation between Egypt's new president and the country's powerful military. On this edition of News Analysis, we're asking where the new Egypt is headed.
Lawmakers from various political factions as well as independent candidates heeded to Morsi's order to get back to work. During the first session, lawmakers approved a proposal to seek legal advice on how to implement the top court ruling, which still remains ambiguous. Although the military and the High Court are sticking to the ruling, many lawmakers believe that President Morsi has power over the state's institutions. They argue the move to reinstate parliament is not against the Supreme Court ruling because the verdict only suspended a third of the seats won by individuals for not complying with the electoral law.
The president's decision restores rights to their rightful owners and balances power between authorities. So this is a kind of fulfillment of his promise, the return of the country's institutions and the return of the power supervision. We've never seen in any country in history where the legislative powers are in the hands of the military.
But some other lawmakers say the decision violates the top court verdict.
The parliament must work to make a correct decision regarding this issue, which is a balance between correcting its formation and respecting the Supreme Court's ruling, because they are supposed to respect judicial decisions. And I think that this precise balance requires upholding parliamentary sessions for a time period of 50 to 60 days until the one-third of individual parliamentary seats, which the Supreme Court ruled were elected upon unsound decrees, is re-elected.
The High Court dissolved parliament a day ahead of last month's runoff presidential vote, which brought Morsi to power. Many see the move by the Mubarak-appointed judges as a way to hold back presidential powers and nudge the country into a power struggle between Morsi and military chiefs.
We are now in a struggle between a newborn regime and an old regime struggling to remain intact. And the old regime is using different methods in order to overpower the people's will, destroying their legitimate institutions and destroying a parliament elected by 30 million Egyptians. But I think that when the populations rise to regain their rights, no one's able to stop them.
Anti-junta protesters have heeded to the Muslim Brotherhood's call to gather in Cairo's iconic Liberation Square in support of the president's decision. They say as president, Morsi has the right to change, modify, or revoke decisions by the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, which took over power after the former dictator, Hosni Mubarak, was ousted.
Well, joining me now live from Beirut is Mr. Ibrahim Mousavi. He's a political analyst. I'd also like to welcome Jennifer Lowenstein with us live from Madison. She's the Associate Director of the Middle East Studies Program with the University of Wisconsin. Thank you very much for being with us. My first question to our guest in Beirut, Mr. Mousavi, looking at what's happened in Egypt right now, the latest news, of course, telling us that the top court has now freezed that decree by the president for the dissolved parliament to be reinstated. Is this a confrontation, would you call it as such, between Mohamed Morsi and the military council?
Well, I believe this is a kind of a preliminary test that is taking place between the military at one side and Mohamed Morsi, the president of Egypt, at the other side. We all know that he wanted to reinstate the parliament, to give it a push in order to restore its activities and to say that it is not legitimate at all to cancel or to ban the parliament from assuming its responsibilities. Now, this is one of the first show down that taking place between the two parties, but I believe the two parties are going sooner or later to come into certain compromise, into a certain bargain that would enable them both to work. It's not feasible at all. It's not easy at all. To see any kind of really clash going on there. Yes, there is a kind of a struggle, there is a kind of ongoing crisis, but this is a kind of experimental test, if we can say. It's a kind of, we have a period where both of the parties are going to test the ability of the other to see whether they are going to rule and to run the show smoothly or not.
So basically you're saying that this is not an all-out confrontation yet. Let's just go to Madison now and have Jennifer's opinion on this as well. So basically, Jennifer, in your opinion, is this not about actually a confrontation now or a power struggle, so to speak, between the two sides, but as some other observers have been saying, about a behind-the-scenes even deal between the two sides to quiet down a public that is concerned about the military's sweeping powers?
Yeah, I think really one of the things people have to understand is that we can't really predict the future. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do suspect that this is more than I suspect this is going to be more of a confrontation than it currently appears to be. And the reason for that is because for the first time in its history, the Muslim Brotherhood has a candidate as president of Egypt. And it prior to this, it was the Muslim Brotherhood was outlawed by the Mubarak and Sadat regimes. It had a kind of symbiotic relationship with the military, with the Mubarak regime, and they functioned fairly well together despite the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood was officially outlawed. That said, the situation is considerably different now. Now, in the eyes of many, many people in Egypt, there is a reason to believe, there is a reason for the Muslim Brotherhood to take and hold power. So the question for me is, will there be greater confrontation in the future?
Right.
Or is this just a kind of power struggle that is going to set into motion?
Right, and that is a major question here.
A kind of balance of forces.
Yeah, we'll go back to that question, Jennifer. I'll just stop you if I may. The issue of who is ultimately going to have the power and whether the public will approve of it. Before we discuss that point, Mr. Ibrahim Mousavi, back to you. Let's see how the military...
Yes, I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing.
Okay, we'll try to fix that problem with the audio with Jennifer, but right now let's go to Beirut, Mr. Mousavi. How is the military going to respond, do you think? Well, taking into consideration the fact that it does have a power right now, although it lacks popular support. First of all, when the parliament was reinstated and lawmakers came to parliament today, the military didn't stop them from entering parliament. And they've only made, up until now, just one public comment saying that they are committed to the constitution and the law. Do you think we should have been expecting a stronger response? And why is the military not giving that stronger response?
Well, as I told you, my estimation, my anticipation to this crisis is that both of the parties are going to work it out. They are going to see a kind of functional solution for this confrontation that is taking place. I don't believe this is going to escalate into an overall confrontation and or a clash between the two parties, though it's a very tight position now. What I think is that, yes, I mean, now you're talking about a revolution, you're talking about the people, the public opinion. The military do not want to show themselves as being anti-the people or anti-constitutional things. They are going to stick to the constitutional manner of acting. That's why they were resorted to the top court in order to take a ruling to ban or to say that the ruling that has been given by the decision by the top court is a constitutional one, and there is no way that the parliament could be reinstated. Why the military wanted to take this decision? Why did they want to go into the constitutional way? Why did they want to go to the top court? Simply because they want to go in line with the demands of the people, simply because they don't want to send the wrong message that they are like in a clash with the public opinion. They don't want, like, again, the Tahrir Square to be filled with people who are going to vent out their anger against the military.
When we are speaking about the extent of the power that the military has, just again, Mr. Mousavi, based on the annex to the constitutional declaration, SCARF has given itself effectively control over the drafting of a new constitution, the national budget, as you know. They've also stripped Morsi of significant powers. Are things going to stay like this? I guess in the U.S. saying the question now again is how this is going to turn out. We're seeing right now a lot of power with the military. Is it going to stay like this?
I'm not saying that this is the situation that will continue to be in the future. What I'm simply trying to say is that the military does not want to go into a kind of confrontation right now. They want to go the constitutional way in order to say that they don't want the parliament to be reinstituted. You're absolutely right that the military did strip Morsi from many of his prerogatives and the rights that he used to enjoy, the president in Egypt. But I mean, at the same time, they don't want to go into this open confrontation now because they don't want to go into a confrontation with the street as well. Because we all know Morsi is the decision of the people. The people have voted and they wanted him to be the president of Egypt. Now it's a kind of a test between the two parties. Sooner or later they are going to come into a kind of compromise where he could enjoy more of the powers that he used to have. It's a power struggle and we have to wait and see at this point. This is a kind of pulling and pushing, but sometime in the future we will see the result.
Right. Well, I'd just like to go back to Madison, see if our connection with Jennifer is okay now. Jennifer, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. The question now...
And I have no echo.
Okay. What a lot of observers right now are saying that it is difficult to see how Egypt's conduct on the international stage can change with this situation that Egypt is in. It has, of course, a new president, and the president was a Muslim Brotherhood candidate, and we know the positions of the Muslim Brotherhood, for instance, against Israel and for an independent Egypt. A lot of differences, of course, they've been campaigning for compared to the previous dictatorship, but are we going to see those actions in the international stage considering the situation or the politics, inside politics of Egypt right now?
Well, I agree with Mr. Mousavi, first of all, that the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces does not want to be seen in the eyes of the Egyptian public as being anti-democratic, anti-constitutional, and yet with the Brotherhood finally in a position of power, I would expect to see a gradual tilt in the country, within the presidency and his office, towards assuming more power. As long as the Mubarak regime was in place, the Muslim Brotherhood cooperated up to a point with the regime. There was a symbiotic relationship. That's no longer the case, and the Brotherhood is at odds with the military on a number of subjects. We have to also remember that the people who went to Tahrir Square in the beginning of the Egyptian uprising did not represent the Muslim Brotherhood, nor did they represent the old regime in Egypt. They represented the April 6th youth movement, the labor unions, right, and a host of other groups and subgroups that don't feel represented at all in Egypt right now.
Right, I'll just stop you there, if I may.
And are watching this very closely, Jennifer, both because they fear...
Yeah, I'm sorry, because I've just been told that joining us now live from Cairo is Mr. Walid al-Haddad, a spokesman for the Muslim Brotherhood. Let's just bring him into the discussion on this as well. Mr. Haddad, welcome. The question that I'd like to put to you first is that the decree of President Mohamed Morsi now being... rather rejected by the top court in Egypt. The court has said that it's going to freeze that order on the reinstatement of parliament. What does this mean for the position of the new president?
Well, certainly Egyptians are still in a confrontation with the deep state. This expression of deep state, which we can take an example from this deep state of the Constitutional Court. It's a clear example that the Constitutional Court, which has been formed in the past by Mubarak's regime, is still working right now. And SCAF, which is the Supreme Council of Armed Forces, is using the Constitutional Court as one hand to make some sort of confrontation with the president, the elected president, Dr. Mohamed Morsi. They are dealing with the president as the Muslim Brotherhood's one. They forgot that Dr. Mohamed Morsi is the president for all Egyptian people. He has the votes of more than 30 million of Egyptian people. So now we are talking about the first civil president. Dr. Mohamed Morsi, when he made his decree to reinstate the parliament, there was some endorsement in the street, especially in Tahrir Square and different squares in Egypt. Now he is right in his decision, and we are honored by his decision because he's the president and he's the right to make this decision. But on the other hand, we find that Supreme Council of Armed Forces is fighting and try to fight more in order to continue in the power. They didn't deliver all the powers to the president. Now we find another pictures or images for presence of SCAF in the authority
Mr.
Or
Hadad, if I could just stop
power.
You there, because one major question remains, and that is why Mohamed Morsi did issue this decree. Was this an initial step to challenge the sweeping powers of the military council, or is this not about actually a confrontation, and it's about negotiations, it's about deals, it's about a distribution of power between the president and the military council?
There is no room for distribution of power between the president and the armed forces because the armed forces has one position, which is the security to leave the power and leave the political scene, and they must return to their positions. They have no sharing in power. The power must be for the executive power, for the president and the cabinet, his cabinet, and the legislation with the parliament and the judicial power must be with the court, not with any other entity. So Supreme Council for Armed Forces, they have no room for sharing or participating.
So you're saying that we are going to see an all-out confrontation then between Mohamed Morsi and the military?
But I think the Dr. Mohamed Morsi, the president, will win this battle because he has the support from the people. And as we know, in all constitutions, that the nation is the main source for power. So Dr. Mohamed Morsi is the president for all Egyptian people, and he will satisfy people's need, and he will achieve their will. And I think this battle will end very shortly. By some decisions from the president, who will make more decisions in the upcoming weeks.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's go back to Beirut now and Mr. Mousavi on this. Mr. Mousavi, do you agree then that this challenge, so to speak, as our guest in Cairo is saying, is going to gradually be to the benefit and favor of Mohamed Morsi because of the popular support?
Yes, I totally agree, actually. This is something that we have to wait and see, but the hopes that because, as has been told by Mr. Waid al-Haddad, yes, you're talking about a president that came after a revolution. You're talking about a legitimacy that has been given to him by a sizable amount of the Egyptian population. He is the president of all of Egypt, of all of the Egyptians, and he is trying to reinstate and to function, to work, to make all the institutions work in a constitutional way. So I believe, yes, he is going to rally much support behind him, and I believe that he is going to be in a position to be in a position supported by the population, and this is going to give him an upper hand in the crisis, in the ongoing crisis. But at the same time, I totally believe that the Muslim Brotherhood, you're talking here about a wise Islamic movement, you're talking about people who really want to build gradually their own country, so they are not going, they don't want to go into confrontation with the military, but at the same time, they are not going to back away from giving the people their own rights.
Right. Well, let's go back to Madison now and have Jennifer's view on this as well. Now, we are running out of time, Jennifer, so I'd just like to go to that part of the discussion that has to do with the international aspect of all this. We know, for instance, speaking about the U.S., that American aid of $1.3 billion a year since Egypt signed the Camp David Accords and made peace with Israel, that said a lot about how Egyptian policies were in favor, for instance, of the United States. So how are things going to change now? Do you think that the United States, and for that matter Israel, are concerned that Mohamed Morsi in Egypt would mean new policies that would not be necessarily in their favor?
I think that's a very good question, and it was one of the issues I was going to bring up if you hadn't. First of all, I think that the Americans are expecting the armed forces and the Muslim Brotherhood to come to some kind of at least superficial agreement. They're expecting that. That's their anticipation. I think, but we are forgetting a couple of things. One, not everyone in Egypt is happy about this election. Not everyone, many people see the Muslim Brotherhood as well as the armed forces as representatives of the old Egypt, not as the revolutionaries who came out and objected. Then there's the external factor of the role that the United States will play in accepting any real challenge to power by the Muslim Brotherhood. I would expect that there is going to be a lot of resistance to that within the upper circles of the American government. I don't know how it will play out, but certainly the U.S. government has backed the armed forces up till now, and I think they're expecting the armed forces to stay at least in control of foreign policy. That's going to be a very interesting
right. Jennifer, I'll just stop you. I'm really sorry, we're running
this
out of time.
Event.
Yeah, let's just at the last minute bring in Mr. Haddad's view on this as well. Mr. Haddad, would you say then that Mohamed Morsi can actually bring about those foreign policy changes that we're speaking about on Palestine and on the U.S.?
Yeah, our position for foreign policy and Dr. Mohamed Morsi's program for the foreign policy is very clear. We are supporting Palestinian rights. We are also respecting all treaties and accords with any other country. And we, when we are talking about the David Accord or the Peace Treaty, it's a treaty in the past made from the previous governments. And we are respecting these accords, but we are calling the other side to respect without any preparation or changes or amendments.
Okay, I have to stop you there, Mr. Haddad. I'm really sorry.
It's our right to have our power from our people.
Thank you very much. I'm afraid we've run out of time. Mr. Waleed Al-Haddad joining us there live from Cairo, spokesman for the Muslim Brotherhood. A big thank you to Ibrahim Mousavi in Beirut, political analyst, and Jennifer Lowenstein in Madison, associate director of Middle East Studies program with the University of Wisconsin. Thank you very much for staying with us. From Miho Maleski, until our next program, goodbye.